from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
The Miami Dolphins have to be favored. They were right on the brink last year. Tua Tagovailoa, the top five quarterback. You got Tyreek Hill, Jaylen Waddle, and OBJ at wide receiver. This team is stacked and built to not just beat the Bills, but also go far into the playoffs. Did an amazing job of retooling their defensive pass rush this year, having Bradley Chubb, Jalen Phillips coming off injury. They signed Shaquille Barrett, and then they drafted Chop Robinson from Penn State so he can grow and develop behind those guys. I think the Dolphins have done an amazing job quietly of putting themselves in a great position to go on a nice playoff run.
Okay, so that's Robert Griffin III. There's been a couple of ESPN clips in the last day that have really triggered me. This one might not do it to the same extent as the Allen turnover nonsense has. But, I don't know, man. What in the world have the Dolphins done this offseason that would make anybody think that they're capable or about to go on some deep playoff run? What? They have lost. I'm trying to pull up. Eric Eager had earlier in the offseason, before I believe he... Oh, no, it wasn't Eric Eager. It was Kevin Cole. Kevin Cole from Expected Points. He had a chart. It was EPA won or gained or lost in your offseason. Who lost the most? Trying to compute, who lost the most, who gained the most. And the Bills were one of the teams that had lost the most with EPA. Expected points lost. The Ravens were by far the worst. The Ravens quietly had more subtractions this offseason than any team in the league, and it was double any team in the league. The Ravens were so far and away last in this, which is why I'm very, I want to say very low on the Ravens. I think they're a playoff team. I think they'll compete for the division. But anyone on these networks that says the Bills' window is closing because they lost some pieces in their offseason, most of which, by the way, were guys that mattered more to them 3 years ago than did last year. Tre'Davious White was not on the field last year. Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde were average safeties last year. Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs let them down in the final 8 games of the year, or at least saw a big decrease in their numbers. That could be Joe Brady. But, those guys mattered. They were big names. But especially the defensive pieces, just these guys were not elite players anymore. Baltimore lost. They lost guys, and they lost them in volume. But near the Bills in that list was Miami. Like, Miami lost pieces, and they added some too, but they were more veteran, cheap guys. Like, they brought in Jordan Poyer, right? And they brought in Calais Campbell on a small deal to fill in until Jalen Phillips eventually gets back, which, who knows when that be. Shaq Barrett, same thing, like a cheap veteran, kind of past his prime, but maybe can still give them a little bit, free agent signing, but impact players, like, they didn't do that. They lost Robert Hunt, their best interior lineman. He got way too much money in Carolina. I mean, $100 million for a guard. I don't know. I wouldn't have done that, but they lost him. So, where are the Dolphins at? I think they're the same team. I think they're the same team. The difference might be they don't have their best pass rusher going into this into the year. And if they're the same team, well, what were they? They beat up on the worst teams in the league constantly, would smoke the bad teams, and could not beat the good teams. What were they, like 1-7, 1-6 against playoff teams last year? Maybe it was 1-7 if you included the playoffs. They get to the playoffs, and the big criticism about them was, well, Tua's arm strength, and once the weather gets a little bit more frigid, what do? Well, they rely on their quarterback less and less and less as the season progresses. And that's exactly what happened last year. The Dolphins, for all the talk that the Bills got more run heavy, the Dolphins, by Ben Baldwin's numbers and his neutral situation pass rate, the Dolphins, in the first 10 games, were the fourth pass-happiest team in the league. And the rest of the way, they were 26th. You think the Bills started running the ball more? The Dolphins had to run it more and more and more. And then they got to play the Chiefs, and it came time for their quarterback to put on the long sleeves and go out into the 0 degree frigid temperatures and go battle Patrick Mahomes. And what did their quarterback do? Their quarterback dumped the ball off on a 4th and 12. 8 yards short of the sticks. That's what their quarterback did. How in the world are you supposed to trust that guy to go deep in the playoffs? I don't doubt they'll win games. I think they'll definitely win games. I think they'll be competing for the playoffs, and they'll probably be competing for the division, but I wouldn't pick them to win it, and I wouldn't pick them to win any playoff games unless they're hosting, because I don't think that quarterback is someone that can take you. He has limitations that I think you can only hide for so long. As a season progresses, this is kind of what happened last year, I think. Mike McDaniel had the perfect plan for Tua. The perfect plan for Tua. And it was working to a T, except when they played the Bills. The Bills knew the answer, and they stifled them in week 3. Otherwise, first half of the year, McDaniel had it. He knew exactly what to do to get the most out of Tua. And then, look at the good teams and what they did defensively against the Dolphins second half of the year and in the playoffs. Oh, they knew how to stop it. They figured it out. They figured it out. And what's your counterpunch? And McDaniel's got to find out what that counterpunch is. But can you do it for a whole year? Because as more and more tape gets out on you, you become easier to defend. At least your plan A becomes easier to defend. What's your plan B? And that quarterback, I don't know if you can have a plan B with him. There's only so much you can do with a quarterback that can't throw to many parts of the field. There's many throws he can't make because the ball velocity is not there. And there's routes you can't even try because he's not even allowed to hold on to the ball for more than 3 seconds because he'll get hit and he'll get hurt. They have a cap. They have a limitation. And it, to me, stops short of deep playoff run. I'm not a believer in the Jets either because I don't think Rodgers will stay healthy. But I will far more quickly get to the Jets have the possibility of going in a deep playoff run than Miami does. The Jets, it's easy. It's not easy, but it's simple. Rodgers just has to stay healthy and be any form of what he was in Green Bay. That's pretty much it. If they do that, they have the ability to go deep. Because the line is improved. That's another, like, what if they got to stay healthy because they brought in some injury-prone guys. But the line's better. The defense is elite. They have a stud number one receiver. Mike Williams is a good idea as a number two, better than they had had. Breece Hall is a star running back. So it's just the quarterback. If Rodgers is good, then the Jets will be great. And I don't know what their limitations would be. Depends. We'll have to see what we get from Rodgers. I don't want to just, you know, 41 years old, Achilles injury. He could be a guy where they have to throw the ball within 3 seconds because they're scared of him getting hit. That's one thing about Joe Brady that there's just no excuse. You know, even though, like, where are we going to end up on him after a year? He's not getting fired during the season, right? Like, even if fans are unhappy with the job he's done or the Bills aren't scoring points and it just looks constipated like it did last year under Ken Dorsey, it's his first full year. Like, they're not doing that again. They're not firing another offensive coordinator in back-to-back seasons, even if it went really poorly. Brady, I think, does have a built-in excuse that will protect him, one, from being fired, for sure, and two, I think, from the fans' wrath. There's always going to be people that want to blame the offensive coordinator because everyone thinks they're a play caller. And I'm guilty of that, too. Everybody thinks they're a play caller. We had, you know, very few calls, but there were a select few that I remember would want to call in and say that Brian Daboll should be fired. Again, that was a very small minority, I'm sure. But every coordinator is going to get some criticism. So Brady's going to get that. But for the masses, I think he has a built-in excuse. If it's not going well for him and for the offense, I think the finger gets pointed at the roster quicker than it would be pointed at the offensive coordinator. I can just see it now where the year, maybe it's going fine, maybe it's going somewhat similar to last year. Maybe they're 7-5 and they're 9th in offense, total offense, which is far below expectation for a quarterback with a team that's led by Josh Allen, by the way. 9th is not good enough. So, and that's about probably what they were last year with Dorsey. And we all knew it wasn't good enough because you can be first, you can be second, you should be. So, if the season starts going like that, where does the finger get pointed? I mean, unless some receiver like Coleman, no, I don't even know if it matters. It would have to be that position. It's not going to be Allen. And the line, even if the line like got banged up or McGovern just can't play center, you know, like hasn't done it since college. And, you know, he's almost like a rookie in that way. He grew up playing center and says he can play center and did so in college, but the guy hasn't done it in the NFL. So in some ways, he's a rookie center. And McGovern, I think, will be fine, but I don't know. Between him and David Edwards next to him, like, is the line not performing? Does Spencer Brown revert to what he was? Like, I can't even get there with the line would ever be the reason that we're mad about the offense, because even if everything was going wrong, Allen is the great neutralizer with that. He's just too good at avoiding sacks for that to ever be the thing that sinks the Bills. At this present moment, with his athleticism the way it is, line is not going to be the biggest problem that sinks them. I can't believe it. I think Allen's too good at avoiding sacks, even if the guys got through. But receiver can do it. Guys not being open down the field, guys not catching the football, players playing in roles that maybe they shouldn't be. If the offense isn't going the way we want it, will it be pointed at Bean or will it just be pointed at the receivers? Will there be an understanding of why it's happening? Brady, I think, would skate in many areas because I can just see now the take of, well, what is he supposed to do? We all know what this receiver core is, right? What's he supposed to do with, you know, three guys that all probably are at their best playing in the slot? That's the thing about their offense right now, about the roster they've built, the skill sets that they have, that is maybe most concerning. Like, I think they could be okay. I think Coleman could be fine playing outside at the X. I think Curtis Samuel will be good playing the Stephon Diggs role as the Z receiver. Off the line of scrimmage, you know, pre-snap motion, often lining up on the outside. I think Samuel will be good in that role. And I think Shakir will be good in his slot role. Like, I think there can be optimism. But you do, if you look at it a different way, this would be the negative way, you have three guys, Coleman, Shakir, Samuel, and lump in Kincaid, and even Knox if you want for this. Your five weapons that you've invested the most in all are at their best in the slot or running in the middle of the field. That's the offense they currently have. All of their five most invested in weapons all win in the same area of the field. Coleman is a zone beater. You look at his where he won at Florida State, where he got open, where he caught the ball. Coleman's highlight reel plays often are going to be man coverage plays where a guy's draped all over him and he goes up over him and makes the catch. But the areas that he gets open the most is zone coverage. And I think that's part of the reason why a lot of draft evaluators, in the media at least, think he's at his best as a big slot player. Matt Waldman yesterday on Chopin the Bulldog comparing him to Anquan Boldin. That is what some see as Coleman's best spot. Shakir, Matt Harmon from Yahoo yesterday wrote about all the Bills' weapons, how it kind of shakes out. And Harmon wrote about Shakir. He called him a mostly slot player, but not an only slot player. So kind of like Samuel for that. I think he can succeed in other spots, but I don't think anybody would dispute that if you want Khalil Shakir at his best, he's doing that in the slot. And Samuel is kind of the same thing where you look at his career track record, where he plays the most, where he's put up the most production, mostly because he's played it the most, I know, so it's a volume thing, but it's also in the slot. And Kincaid, PFF had this, that Kincaid ran 60% of his routes as a tight end from slot receiver. Highest rate in the league. So I feel like I got four guys that all do their thing the best when they're all playing kind of the same spot. But I got to have a couple of them move. I've got to have Samuel be able to play on the outside. I've got to have Coleman be able to play that Gabe Davis X role. I've got to have Kincaid be able to play as an inline tight end, which, by the way, I do think he can do. I was looking up on Twitter from some of my own tweets during the season because I remember Kincaid having a couple of blocks that were just... There was a block in the Denver game. It was the play where James Cook kind of ran up the middle and had a big hole, and a guy knocked the ball out, and the ball bounced right back up to James Cook, and Cook went off for like 40, 50 yards. That play... Everyone was focused on Cook because not only did he have a big run, but he dropped the ball and it bounced right back up to him. If you ever go back and watch that highlight, watch Kincaid on that play. He sends one of the Broncos' safeties into the shadow realm. He puts this guy into the ground like he is Triple H in the WWE, like putting a guy through the ring. There was another one on another big play. Shakir's 80-yard touchdown against the Jets. Go watch that highlight back. Kincaid, who's lined up at tight end on the play, he hits his block off the line and then runs down the field after Shakir and takes out not one, not two, but three Jet defenders at the 10-yard line with like a spin block. So, I don't know. PFF liked him as a blocker. His grade there was fine. I think Kincaid is the one I would trust the most to be, okay, yeah, you played 60% of your routes out of the slot last year. I don't need that to be that high. You want it to be 30, and the rest of it you're playing as a normal tight end? I think that's fine. I think Kincaid's a normal tight end. I didn't see this, you know, grave concern that, oh no, he can't hold a block. Jimmy Graham, wasn't that a thing about Jimmy Graham back in the day in New Orleans? That he's not even like a real tight end because they just never, ever have Jimmy Graham block because he's so bad at it. That to me is not Kincaid. I'm not saying he's George Kittle, like one of the best in the league, but I didn't see anybody complain too much about that last year. So Kincaid, I think, is the one most natural. Just play him a tight end. That's it. Just play him a tight end, Joe Brady, and you're good. And Samuel, I think you could just play him at the Z, and I think you'll probably be, just be good. Coleman is the big question mark, not just because he's a rookie even, but it's because so many people think the spot he's best at is not where the Bills plan to play him. And if he can't play that spot, well, then I got Marquez Valdes-Scantling on the field a lot, or I got Mac Hollins on the field a lot, or, you know, if he can keep his head on straight, maybe I have Chase Claypool on the field a lot. Coleman and the rest of the Bills rookies will report to training camp today. And I assume that means St. John Fisher. I don't know if they're ready to go there. I don't know if do they report here at the Bills facilities. It's a good question. I should text Sal and ask because I'm not sure what the answer to that question is. Bills training camp a week from tomorrow at St. John Fisher. Open championship this week as well. Tiger Woods got into it with Colin Montgomery a little bit. Read that quote for you if you missed it, coming back. And we talked a lot last week with Sal, a couple of rants about the U.S. soccer manager job. A very quick update when we come back, because Jurgen Klopp was my dream idea. They fired Berhalter, that was what I wanted. The guy that was running things, it was so bad at his job, Greg Berhalter, they got rid of him. Okay, happy day. Now it's, okay, let me fire up my unrealistic hope that they're going to land some world-class soccer manager to coach the U.S. team. And that seemed like that wasn't going well until yesterday. So I got a quick update on that story that I've got a very quick opinion on. But I would like your phone calls. 803-0550 on Joe Brady. Like, is he not going to get a lot of the blame this year if the offense doesn't go well? Because I feel like Bean slash just the receiver core being the state that it's in is going to be the first place that blame gets thrown. 803-0550 is the phone number. Joe DiBiase and Nate Geary had to duck out. Jeremy White will be back next week for Bills training camp. So stay tuned. Looking for your phone calls here on WGR.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a Gel Flex Grid. The Gel Flex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the Gel Flex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Major tournament semifinals. The trend is their friend. And what a goal that was! Lamine Yamal! You're looking at the youngest ever scorer at the Euros. It has happened!
Yamal, 16-year-old for Spain. You'll be hearing his name once in a while for probably the next 25 years. So Spain wins the Euro. And we had talked a lot in the last couple of weeks about Greg Berhalter, the now former U.S. soccer manager. I was very happy to see that. Thought he was a very bad coach. It was approaching on Ralph Kruger levels for me. I would say the coaches that I just couldn't believe how bad they really were, like where it's just, it is breathtaking how bad they are. And you can't believe, every day you wake up and you can't believe they still are, they're still employed. Kruger is one and Berhalter might be the other. I don't know that I ever got that way about a Bills coach. Maybe, like with Marone, I guess. Marone, though, won some games. And as a drought kid who had never remembered the Bills being in the playoffs, you know, he might have been really bad at his job, but he went 9-7, and like that was the best season I had ever seen.
What about Rex?
And Rex, yeah, like Rex, yeah, no, still the same. Like, it was bad. I'm not saying it wasn't bad, but it never approached on this level for me, where I just simply can't fathom this person doing the job for one more day. That was Kruger for me, and that was That was Berhalter. Some evil person on Twitter, by the way, Chuck, had the audacity to suggest that former soccer chairman Ralph Kruger become the United States national team coach. Do not put that evil on me, Chuck, because that is not happening. What might happen, which is pretty amazing, is the guy that coached Spain to the Euro title a couple days ago, Luis de la Fuente is his name. He wants the U.S. job. I mean, that should be it then, right? Shouldn't it be over? Wait, the Spain manager who just won is kind of infatuated by the challenge of turning around the U.S. in. What do you want? Sign on the dotted line. I feel like that should just happen now. I don't know why it wouldn't. There might be political reasons why, you know, you gotta, English be your first language, maybe, or there might be reasons like that. Coaching in the MLS, whatever. So that was a little update on that story that is actually very good. The Spain manager wants the U.S. job. Okay. In. One other thing that I wanted to get into. Reminder, if you missed the news about an hour ago, Chris Brown, new official play-by-play man of the Buffalo Bills. He is the voice of the Buffalo Bills going forward. Odyssey and the Bills announcing that officially about an hour ago. So super cool. Chris Brown will be calling Bills games going forward. Also, give716.org. We are approaching $500,000. High mark this hour, $25,000 matching donation. So head over to give716.org where you can donate there today here on July 16th. So some news from front office sports in the world of sports television. It looks like or sounds like Skip Bayless is done at Fox. Whether that's him leaving or whether that's them being done, it might be mutual. But Skip Bayless is done at Fox. This is, and like, man, I have not watched Skip Bayless in, I don't even think I've watched a clip of his in a long time. Do you see his clips even going viral anymore?
Like, there's only like when the show just like looks bad.
Yeah, when it's
and it's
really,
not even like
really
a bad take though. It's like a.
It was Shannon Sharp. It was when Shannon Sharp was like personally mad at him or offended because Skip kept taking personal shots at him. I saw a couple clips like a year ago when that was happening.
Well, no, I've seen a couple where it's like he just looks lost. It's not like he's saying something and people are looking back like, oh wow, yep, that was really bad. He just looked like he didn't know where to go next, and like his co-hosts were just kind of look at him like, what do you want me to do here?
Okay,
like that's the kind of clips that are, I guess, if you want to say, going viral, but they're not really going viral. They're just, everyone's kind of just clowning on it.
No, right.
At this point,
I see Stephen A. clips go viral, you know, once a day, and everyone's like, oh, look how big a dummy this guy is, right? And others have that happen a lot at his own network. Really, you know what this is? Get ready, Bills fans, because there's a new sheriff in town. Skip Bayless was really bad with this stuff. Insufferable. Fake. Right? Like the decade-long war against LeBron that Skip Bayless waged was completely fake. Of course it was. He knows I'm the only one that's going to have this, so I'm going to get out and be the loudest about it, and that's going to... to his credit, did he build a career off it? He maybe built a career off how wrong he was about LeBron. That was his thing. But now...
The other thing is his Cowboys stuff, too, where he's like, done with this team, throws the jersey in the trash can and all that.
Oh, okay, I'm glad you mentioned that. That's actually where I've seen him the most, is his weird Twitter videos where he's just looking into the camera, making faces, and like, what is happening here? Like, these weird, awkward, cringeworthy videos is maybe where I've seen him the most. That network has been taken from Skip by our man, Nick Wright. Nick Wright, lauded Bills troll, right? Chiefs homer, Nick Wright. That's his network now. And it really has been. There's more youth there. There's more energy there. I think Nick Wright, if you listen to his podcast, he's like one of the most infuriating people on sports television. Because if you listen to his podcast, that dude is smart. Like, there is smart analysis in there. And he just doesn't want to do it on TV because he's doing the loud, obnoxious thing. But that's his network now. So I don't watch these shows, but it is interesting to me to see the money thrown around and the movement, right? Like, Stephen A. Smith, this dude's really about to sign a contract for $25 million a year. Did I see 5 years, $125 million? It's, I guess, the state of where sports TV is at, right? Like, I like the Mina Kimes of the world. Whenever the football season's ongoing, it's on really early in the morning. But NFL matchup with Greg Cosell and Kevin Bowen, right? Why is the name escaping me? Is it Kevin Bowen? I'm forgetting it off the top of my head. Used to be Mike Mayock. That show, like when they're going through the film of it, like there's some good, intelligent stuff out there. Dan Orlovsky is pretty good once in a while, but the guys making the money are the ones that are the loud, wrong ones all the time. How did that happen? How did that happen? I don't like that. I don't like that. Because you should be trying to get things right. We're all going to be bad at it. The teams are bad at it. Of course, we're going to be bad at it. But you got to try to get it right. And it feels like the guys in the high end of sports TV, and this guy that's leaving now, Skip Bayless, maybe the first one that started it all. Maybe he's the reason. Maybe he's the reason we have all this. It feels like they're not trying to be right. It feels like they're trying to be wrong. That makes it, oh, it makes it so frustrating, annoying, insufferable. Can't watch it. Because you got to at least be authentic, and that's really what it feels like is missing.
Hasn't social media kind of done that too? Because like they know if they say something stupid or like a hot take or whatever, but like not a good hot take, that so many people can just gravitate towards it and just get engagement out of it.
What gets more clicks? What gets more views? Right. It's going to be whatever. If I went on this show today and said that, I don't know. I can't dream of like what's the worst take you could have about Josh Allen right now? Well, I went off on it yesterday. It's that turnovers are stopping them from winning football games. Okay, Jeremy Fowler, as they go 63-30 with Allen as their quarterback leading the league in turnovers. Is it really that important? That would be the worst one for me. What's like so ridiculous though? But beyond that, Allen is, I can't even do it.
Is the overrated thing kind of there, too?
That was yesterday, right? NFL executive said he was the most overrated in the league.
Yeah, that was separate from the turnover stuff, though.
Yeah. That one was pretty good. If I said today that Josh Allen, mark my words, Josh Allen is poisonous and he will never win a Super Bowl.
Never appear in a Super Bowl.
Right. That would get more engagement on social media than if I just sat up here and said, oh, yeah, I think Allen's the second best quarterback in football. So, yeah, that's a good point. That's what drives it, and that maybe is where all this comes from. You got to try, though. You got to try to be right. If you're going to be loud wrong, at least be authentic being loud wrong. I was loud wrong about Allen. I thought he was going to stink when he got drafted. Not the guy I wanted at all. It allows me to be a little open on the idea that Coleman could be good, by the way. Because we all have bad draft takes. I thought Allen was going to stink. And he was going into that draft. He was the one I didn't want them to pick. And they picked him. And then the moment they picked him, it's like, all right, well, they did it. And I wanted a quarterback, so let's see. I'm open to it being good. And Coleman is kind of like that for me at receiver. It's the same thing where, in 2018, this is for me personally, they needed to draft a quarterback. We all knew it. We all knew they were going to do it too, right? We all knew they were going to pick a quarterback. And then they did it, and I was very much like, oh, no, not that one. Okay, that one. All right, let's cross our fingers. That was me on draft day 2018. And this offseason was pretty much the exact same, but with receiver, of need them to draft a receiver. We all know they got to draft a receiver. I think we all kind of knew they were going to take a receiver. And then draft night showed up, and I was very much like, oh, no, not that one. Wait, okay, that one? All right, let's cross our fingers. That's where I'm at with Coleman. Well, could we get another Allen? Could he be one of the best receivers in football? I mean, it would be stunning to me. It would be kind of like Allen was stunning to me, being this good. It would be stunning to me if Coleman, who could not... Here's another comparison from Allen to Coleman. Allen couldn't throw accurately in college. And that was very much seen at the time as the thing, the weakness you don't want to have. You know, you could be a little slow at reading and reacting because that's something you can get better at over time. And you know, what else? I guess that would be like the other big problem of a quarterback, because arm strength, you can't really fix that. You definitely can't fix. But for Allen, it was accuracy. Don't be inaccurate, because that is something guys just don't get better at. and it's the weakness you don't want to have. And Coleman, you know, coming into this season, it's, well, his weakness is separation. And I think the ability to separate is really the flaw you don't want to have as a wide receiver. And it is hard for me to see him getting miles better at that through his NFL career. But, you know, look at Allen. Nobody thought Allen could get that drastically better with accuracy. And to his credit, like, he did that. Like, sure, his coach has helped. Brian Daboll helped a lot. And I'm sure Ken Dorsey helped a lot as well. A lot of those guys, McDermott, a lot of those guys along the way, I'm sure, helped him become better and better and better as an accurate quarterback. But Allen knew he had to get better at it, and Allen worked at it. Allen didn't say, oh, I don't need to be a 70% passer in the league. I can be who I am and become a great quarterback. Allen, I'll never forget when he talked about with Chris Sims that second offseason, he went away, worked with Jordan Palmer a lot, right, as his personal quarterback coach. He got his throwing motion mapped, digitally mapped, and he changed his motion to something. He worked with people on that. Like, what's the most efficient way to throw the football? And he changed it. And he worked at that, and he fixed it. And that will have to be the job for Coleman. Coleman will have to go away in the lab, and maybe he'll have to completely rework something. Maybe he'll have to rework how he runs. I don't know how drastic it will have to be. And I don't think that's something you can do right now. You know, the same way Allen didn't really change his throwing motion until the third year of his career. Coleman, in year one, you don't have time. The draft process, the combine, meetings throughout the draft, flying around different cities. He flew here to Buffalo before the draft. I'm sure he flew to like 10 other places. So you're traveling a lot, and then here you go, and you get drafted, and you got like 2 months, and boom, here's training camp. Like, it's quick. It's probably something that you play the year out, you do what you do best, and you work at your weaknesses in the second offseason, the third offseason, and it kind of becomes a multi-year process. Because that's how Allen went, with a skill that was very hard to improve at, but he did. And I feel like Coleman right now, getting open and cleaning up the route running, becoming a technician in that way, is going to be a multi-year process for him. At least it would stun me if it wasn't, if it was going to be even quicker. 803-0550 is the phone number. Got into all that with the news that sounds like Skip Bayless is done at Fox Sports, which, you know, I do not need to see him like back on ESPN or anything. Is that going to happen? Is he going to reunite with Stephen A or something? I don't know. Time out here, Extendo Sports. When we come back, give716.org if you want to donate here on July 16th. It is Highmark Hour. Highmark Hour, $25,000 matching donation. Starting at 10, Bandits Lacrosse Balls. First 300 donors of $50 or more if you want to donate coming up at 10 o'clock. Stay tuned. Jody Biasi, this is WGR.
Breaking sports news airs first here. Guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550, 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
Extendo Sports. What else is going on today? Extra Point Show coming up, of course. Get a hockey trade today. Is everyone left? All of them are left. That's how the summer trades work, don't they? You expect the Sabres to be done for like 2 months, and then boom, there you go. Jeff Skinner in the middle of August was a trade that happened for Cliff Poo.
Quentin Byfield signed with the LA Kings.
Yeah.
5 years, $31 million.
Someone should offer sheeted him for that.
Someone should offer sheet anyone, really. Just to be fun.
Anybody. Like, why not the
GMs
Sabres?
Do GMs even know that those exist anymore? Like, come on. Any NHL GM should just send one out because.
Yeah. We, I think determined earlier that we had the worst national anthem ever. Our boss, Alan, came in. He thinks Carl Lewis is the worst ever. And I might agree. Let's do one last time here. Let's before the end of the show. Let's figure this out. These are our final two contestants for the worst anthem of all time. Carl Lewis. You still got the Carl Lewis clip? No? Okay. Or Ingrid, I'm already forgetting her name, Ingrid Andress from last night at the Home Run Derby. Definitely the two finalists, I think, for the worst anthem we've ever seen.
But see, with Carl Lewis, though, like, the majority of his anthem is good. Like, if you listen to the first half of it, he sounds like a normal anthem singer. Sure, he puts a little bit of his own, like, flair and pizzazz into it, but, like, that's kind of what all the anthem singers do.
Yep.
But that one where he just, that one spot where he just chokes up, and then he literally says, oh, let me fix that for you.
Yeah.
And then continues to sing. But I don't know. Last night, I think, was just miles worse.
One last thing to get to before we get out. The Dan Le Batard Show, who is one of my go-to listens podcast-wise, they just put a poll up on Twitter. There's a great question. I'm very interested to hear your answer on. What is the earliest acceptable time to eat a hot dog? What's the earliest accept any day? What's the earliest time to eat a hot dog? Like, can you eat a hot dog at 9 o'clock in the morning? It's basically breakfast.
Yeah, I think you can. It's, I mean, what's in a hot dog? That's the age old question. But,
well,
like,
also, are you someone that subscribes to breakfast? Has got to be breakfast food. You know, there's got to be eggs involved. There's got to be bacon or sausage.
You can have a hot dog with eggs.
Oh no, you couldn't.
What? Why not?
Eggs on a hot dog?
No, not on the hot dog.
Oh,
just
I thought you meant like a breakfast dog.
No, like a pairing.
Would that be good? That'd be terrible, wouldn't it?
People put ketchup on their eggs. So, like,
so you want? So what? If we're creating a breakfast dog, where we put a little scrambled eggs over the hot dog.
What's the difference between a hot dog and a sausage, though? Like, if you're putting, sausage,
isn't there?
Yeah, but if you have sausage, well, I guess breakfast sausage is
breakfast
different.
Sausage is also different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not putting eggs on a Polish sausage.
No. But if you had like a breakfast sausage dog with like breakfast sausage, eggs, ketchup,
yeah,
maybe some onions or something.
Yeah. When I'm gonna say never too early. If I'm on a golf course and I'm hungry. And maybe it was a really early tea time, and I'm at the turn at 9 a.m. And they've got hot dogs on the grill, and I'm hungry. Like, all right, jump in. Why not? All right, that's it for me. Extra Point Show on the way next. Sal will be in with me tomorrow, and then Nate Thursday. I'm trying to book a guest from Sumer Sports tomorrow. They did a big piece about the kickoff rules. We'll see if we can nail that down. But we'll have some fun. 1 week from training camp tomorrow. Jody Biasi, thanks for listening. Stay tuned. Extra Point Show on the way next here in WGR. Give716.org. We did it. We crossed $500,000. They did it, I should say. $511,000 at last check. So be sure to keep the donations coming, though, because now it's on the way to $1 million. Let's get to $1 million. Extra Point Show on the way.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience, is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Extra Point Show coming up, of course. Get a hockey trade today. Is everyone left? All of them are left. That's how the summer trades work, don't they? You expect the Sabres to be done for like 2 months, and then boom, there you go. Jeff Skinner in the middle of August was a trade that happened for Cliff Poo.
Quentin Byfield signed with the LA Kings.
Yeah.
5 years, $31 million.
Someone should offer sheeted him for that.
Someone should offer sheet anyone, really. Just to be fun.
Anybody. Like, why not the Sabres?
Do GMs even know that those exist anymore? Like, come on. Any NHL GM should just send one out because.
Yeah. We, I think determined earlier that we had the worst national anthem ever. Our boss, Alan, came in. He thinks Carl Lewis is the worst ever. And I might agree. Let's do one last time here. Before the end of the show, let's figure this out. These are our final two contestants for the worst anthem of all time. Carl Lewis. You still got the Carl Lewis clip? No? Okay. Or Ingrid, I'm already forgetting her name, Ingrid Andress from last night at the Home Run Derby. Definitely the two finalists, I think, for the worst anthem we've ever seen.
But see, with Carl Lewis, though, like, the majority of his anthem is good. Like, if you listen to the first half of it, he sounds like a normal anthem singer. Sure, he puts a little bit of his own, like, flair and pizzazz into it, but, like, that's kind of what all the anthem singers do.
Yep.
But that one where he just, that one spot where he just chokes up, and he literally says, "Oh, let me fix that for you."
Yeah,
and then continues to sing. But I don't know. Last night I think was just miles worse.
One last thing to get to before we get out: the Dan Le Batard Show, who is one of my go-to listens podcast-wise. They just put a poll up on Twitter. There's a great question. I'm very interested to hear your answer on. What is the earliest acceptable time to eat a hot dog? What's the earliest accept any day? What's the earliest time to eat a hot dog? Like, can you eat a hot dog at 9 o'clock in the morning? It's basically breakfast.
Yeah, I think you can. What's in a hot dog? That's the age-old question. But
someone that subscribes to breakfast? Has got to be breakfast food. You know, there's got to be eggs involved. There's got to be bacon or sausage.
You can have a hot dog with eggs.
Oh, no, you couldn't.
What? Why not?
Eggs on a hot dog?
No, not on the hot dog.
Oh. I thought you meant like a breakfast dog.
No, like a pairing.
Would that be good? That'd be terrible, wouldn't it?
People put ketchup on their eggs. So, like...
If we're creating a breakfast dog... Where we put a little scrambled eggs over the hot dog.
What's the difference between a hot dog and a sausage, though? Like, if you're putting, sausage.
Isn't there?
Yeah, but if you have sausage, well, I guess breakfast sausage is
breakfast different. Sausage is also different, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not putting eggs on a Polish sausage.
No. But if you had, like, a breakfast sausage dog with, like, breakfast sausage, eggs, ketchup.
Yeah.
Maybe some onions or something.
Yeah, I'm going to say never too early. If I'm on a golf course and I'm hungry... And maybe it was a really early tea time, and I'm at the turn at 9 a.m. And they've got hot dogs on the grill, and I'm hungry. Like, all right, I'm in. Why not? All right, that's it for me. Extra Point Show on the way next. Sal will be in with me tomorrow, and then Nate Thursday. I'm trying to book a guest from Sumer Sports tomorrow. They did a big piece about the kickoff rules. We'll see if we can nail that down. But we'll have some fun. 1 week from training camp tomorrow. Jody Biasi, thanks for listening. Stay tuned. Extra Point Show on the way next here in WGR. Give716.org. We did it. We crossed $500,000. They did it, I should say. $511,000 at last check. So be be sure to keep the donations coming, though, because now it's on the way to 1 million. Let's get to 1 million. Extra Point Show on the way.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.